much. You're welcome, man. We're expecting the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry and Fisheries. Thank you very much. Appreciate your presence. We're expecting the Department of Human Settlements. Thank you very much. We appreciate your presence. We're expecting PLUS. Thank you very much. Welcome, PLUS. Long time no see. We're expecting COSATU and FAO. Nobody in that space. We're expecting a trust for community outreach and education. They've confirmed coming. We're expecting Lamosa. They've confirmed coming. We did get a late cancellation from Nkosi. They confirmed coming, and the last minute they had problems. So they are not coming. We're expecting an NGO called Women on Farms. Thank you very much. Welcome, man. We're also expecting AFRA. Thank you very much. We appreciate your presence. We're expecting Lawyers for Human Rights. Thank you very much. And Mr. Vic van Vieren from ILO is here over there. The Legal Resources Center. They're rarely absent. What's going on today? We're expecting the Surplus People's Project. Hello. That's number five. Thank you very much, sir. Perhaps what we need to be doing in the meantime is to outline the purpose of this meeting in order for us to be able to find our feet and hit the ground running when the committee becomes correct. There's a saying in Xhosa that says, "Isisila senkuku sibona mhla kuguta ligutai." In English, they say that it's only in a difficult that you know your true friends. Well, it means more or less the same thing. See, honorable members, they come all the time when the committee sits. And a crucial moment when visitors and people who are going to see them, then they show their true colors. It's very difficult to accommodate that in our bloodstream. There are three purposes for this meeting today. Those who were present in the meeting of March 11th, 2011, would recall that there were specific decisions that were taken which were intended to be implemented and followed up. There were specific areas that we identified which have to be pursued, and we decided we must come back to look at the progress that we have achieved. There's number six coming in. Thank you very much, ma'am. We need one more to be correct. key to those decisions was the conditions of farm workers and farm dwellers in South Africa. And there were specific organizations, NGOs and departments that were meant to go out and give us feedback. I know that our colleagues from the NGO called Women on Farms made a commitment to look at those conditions. Our colleagues from LRC made the commitment to do that. Our colleagues from FAO and COSATU, they've made that commitment. In fact, FAO specifically asked the forum and the committee in particular to play a partnership role with them to make sure that conditions on farms and for farm workers and farm dwellers should improve in South Africa. So today we want to make sure that we make a follow-up on that. In the same meeting, the two organizations, TAU and AgriSA, made a commitment to mobilize all the farmers to make sure that everybody is compliant, not only with the law, but with the human spirit of a South Africa that works, a South Africa that's going forward and that's improving, not only in the human condition, but also to stimulate economic activities in those areas. So today we're going to look at that. Subsequent to that, or maybe let me deal with the second one. The second one was a decision to check the situation physically, go out and look at it, so that those who read the Christian Bible, there's a chapter in St. John 3, verse 11. It goes like, we speak what we know and witness to what we have seen. Parliament is supposed to play oversight role to various entities and government institutions. And one of them is to go and see what people claim they are doing and come back to Parliament and tell the nation, this is what we have seen, this is what is actually happening. And whatever we have seen or are speaking about should be verifiable by somebody else. That is why some of you must have read that Human Rights Watch had published a report. I use this term deliberately so that I'm challenged, purporting to reflect the conditions of workers on farms in the Western Cape, especially in fruit farms and wine farms. We did check the veracity of the methodology they used to collect the information. And we thought that we cannot be bound by their outcomes. It's better to work with the partners that can be verified. Somebody who will be able to say so-and-so's farm in such and such a place has so many workers, they work under these conditions, they live under these conditions, their children go to these schools, do they have scholar transport, and so on. There is a mobile clinic going there, and they do have access to health. Now, if you cannot show and prove that that is the case, we cannot witness to that. Today, we have to make a concrete step towards a program to go out onto the farms and look at what those conditions are, with all the farmers committing to doing it. Fortunately, the gentleman over there from ILO, Mr. Vic van Vuren, has made a commitment to finance the research, not the parliamentary outreach to go and have a look. Parliament is going to fund that. But the actual research that must be proven and rechecked and verified. He's got some money to do that, to help us. Our colleagues from COSATU and FAO, you will now have proof that we have adopted the partnership, not only in theory but in practice, precisely because we take our work seriously. There's a third reason why we're here. And we have agreed that in various platforms, some of you have been involved in the process of the Green Paper. And some of you have made commentaries on the Green Paper. Normally, Green Papers don't get tabled in Parliament. It's only when it becomes policy that they come to Parliament for us to be able to have public hearings and things. So the Green Paper has been given to us for purposes of engagement with our own partners and stakeholders. So we will smuggle in that document today for people to engage with. I know that my colleagues here are eager to hear your opinions about the document and give us feedback. And of course, we have an interest to find out where in your corner you are active, what's happening on farms. Rural development and land reform is a broad thing. It's not just about farm workers and farm dwellers. It's about land tenure. It's about other activities on farms. But for today, we have to make sure that the stakeholders take forward the process that we started. If we want to introduce other new things in the process, that's fine. Everything is welcome. Some people have asked us whether they will have space to make some presentations. We have agreed we will have enough time. We're starting now until 5 o'clock in the evening. I know that some people are saying tomorrow is a holiday. They would want to go far in South Africa to relax. We will not deny anybody leaving, but you won't leave unless until you make a commitment to working with us to further the aims. Remember 1950, was it 1950 when the law was created? If you were seen to be furthering the aims, you got arrested. Now you are welcome to further the aims. Nobody is going to arrest you. Can I get somebody to indicate whether there's something missing in what I should have said, or something that have been said wrongly, honorable members? Not everybody knows us. I'm sorry, I've been arrogant. My name is Stone Caesar, and I'm a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Land Reform, or Rural Development and Land Reform.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and participants of this meeting. Chairperson, there's nothing wrong that has been said. The only thing I want to clarify and apologize for it, maybe it was an oversight on the invitation, because I think we, in the invitation, we thought that it's the chairpersons and the maybe or in whips that should attend this meeting. But when we are looking at the attendance register now, we could see that the attendance register lists all the members of each portfolio committee that is supposed to be here. So I think maybe it's just an oversight on that one. But at the same time, to apologize, because the members wouldn't be coming here, all of them, because most of the members are serving in other committees, and there are committees that are sitting today, so it was not going to be possible for them to attend. So I think I must raise that, so that it's not a co-impression if people are not committed or dedicated to their task. Thank you.
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, she is Ms. Norm Hledambuza. She is the Human Settlements Portfolio Committee Chair. She's part of the research project. She's also our leader in the ad hoc committee of parliament that is going to be visiting farms shortly, which will, is one of those things that we are going to outline during the course of this meeting. Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate that. Any other? I'm surprised, Chief, that Honorable Trollip did send an apology, verbal apology. He never instructed anybody to put it in writing. It's unlike him.
I was going to say that he apologized. I thought he sent a written apology. You see, prior to this, he had he's got an arrangement to be in the Eastern Cape today and tomorrow. And that's actually the problem that he's sitting with. He couldn't, that was things he arranged prior. So he said, I must apologize. And I thought he said he sent the apology through to the SECI also, because I got one on my desk also, a written one. But he said, he told me beforehand that he won't make it.
Thank you very much. He is Mr. Van der Linde, representing the DA in the committee, but is here representing Parliament. Can we move forward? We're still short of one member to make the committee correct, but we're not going to stop doing our work because of that. We're going to continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we can continue with this meeting because we are going to just make recommendations to those decisions. They, before they are going to be implemented, they have to be adopted by this committee. So let's continue. Those who are not here, they will get it from the members who are here when we are deliberating and then making the report, adopting the report for Parliament. So we'll make sure that people should come to that meeting.
I know, ma'am. I think we're making hoo-ha about nothing, because these people who are here, they want to work and they want to make sure that the work is done out there where it matters. The only thing that makes us panic about the quorum is precisely because we invited other people who could have done something else today. As the committee, we should be here, all of us. That's the reason why we're panicking about the matter. Thank you very much. Let's move forward. Can we will now go through the list of organizations that are present here so that we can deal with their responses to the tasks that were given to us, so that we can then move forward. Like I have said, Mr. Vic van Vuuren from ILO has made a commitment, not only verbally for the funding and financing of the research on farms, but also he will make sure that we work with everybody who is willing and able to support us. There is nobody who is going to be left behind, and nobody will be removed from participating. We want today people who really must make sure that this process goes forward. Can we start? I have a presentation here from AgriSA. Can we not ask them to present first? Thank you very much. Ms. Crosby, you want to present from there?
Chief,
you do not have a bioscope.
There is a hard copy available, Chairperson, but unfortunately I didn't bring my netbook, so I cannot put it on the screen. But it's a very short presentation, and there is a hard copy available.
Let me make sure everybody's got a copy. We are spoiled, Ms. Crosby, because we get the bioscope here. Thank you. more copies are being made. Can we share, please, because people here in this corner do not have a copy. If the person next to you has another one, please share so that, yes, make sure that everybody is in the loop. Yeah, here's a copy. Thank you very much. Ms. Crosby, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Apologies for that, Chair. An email was sent through, but as I say, I just don't have my memory stick here this morning to actually put it on the screen. Chairperson, I was under the impression that most of the organizations that had been invited were going to make submissions today. Now, I see it's only us that made a written submission available, but basically we're dealing with a background, and as you said yourself, we had that meeting almost a year, more than a year ago now, on the 16th of March 2011, where most of the parties who are present here today were also present, and where the primary purpose was to find out what solutions could be put in place to deal with this very sensitive matter. And one thing that we want to focus on particularly is the research aspect, because, Chair, as you said rightly, at the end of that meeting you summed up and you made some very specific proposals of what you wanted the organizations to do, and your directions to AgriSA at that meeting were twofold. You said that you would like to have clarity on our viewpoints on expropriation, first of all, and then also because we had said that we believe that objective research is required to deal with this matter in a sensible way, that we should also assist in getting that research going. Now, Chairperson, you've also touched on the green paper process, because subsequent to those public hearings that we had in March, the green paper got published and the minister put together this national reference group, and also six working groups that have to report to the National Reference Group. And one of these groups deal with the Land Rights Management Board, which is the institution that is proposed by the Green Paper to deal with tenure-related issues and disputes. And the purpose of that working group, their scope of work that they are supposed to do was actually extended by the minister at one of the National Reference Group meetings to deal with tenure reform generally. So to look at a tenure policy and evictions policy that could possibly be put into the green paper. So that, and I'm sure the department will give you more information on exactly what's been happening in that working group, but that specific working group has invited most of the stakeholders, I think all of the NGOs who are present here today, as well as the trade unions and PLAS and some of the organizations, have been invited to participate in the working group. And there's also, at the last meeting, we discussed some research that might possibly be done through that group. So, you know, it's probably necessary to just see how that fits with this particular process that the Portfolio Committee is driving. As I said, we're required to make our views on expropriation available. We have done so. We have sent a copy of our policy document to the Portfolio Committee, which sets out our views on expropriation, amongst other things. But basically, AgriSA is not opposed to expropriation. We see it as a measure of last resort. But we understand that it might be necessary in certain circumstances. And then, Chairperson, we are very much supportive of research to be done into this field by an independent institution. Some research has been done, but there's not agreement on the outcome amongst the stakeholders, and also it's a bit outdated by this stage. So we would very much like to see an institution such as the RLO doing research, to look at not only the extent of the problem of evictions, but look a bit broader at conditions on farms generally. You referred to the Human Rights Watch report, which dealt with a lot of aspects, housing and working conditions generally. So I think from our side, whilst we're going to do research, we would like to see it to be broadened up a little bit and not just focus on evictions, but then also be very much solutions-driven, not only define the problem, the extent of the problem and the reasons therefore, but try and chart a way forward to deal with this issue. I think I've basically dealt with a way forward, which you'll find there on the last page of our presentation, except to say, Jefferson, that AgriSA also sees mediation as a very important tool for dealing with all kinds of tenure disputes. And we have prepared a document on mediation, which we included in our email to the Portfolio Committee. We know that the Land Rights Management Facility has been doing both mediation and litigation, and we would really like to see as a way forward the focus very much being on solving these kind of disputes through mediation, first of all. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Crosby. Ms. Crosby has made reference to three documents, your land policy position, the green paper, and the mediation document. We'll make those copies available for people to have a look at them, and then the committee will discuss them. But I put the short presentation and the commitment from AgriSA. What say ye? I subject that in Ungatina, subject of all with the Ochonale meaning that
Tetaman. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And I also take the opportunity to welcome the presentation from AgriSA. I think we appreciate the progress that has been made so far, but I just want to check from AgriSA when they were looking at considering their proposals, policy proposals, because it's the policy proposal what they are referring to. It's not a policy. They cannot have a policy. They're just proposing. So from their policy proposals, how do they view the current situation of evictions? Because all of us, we are interested in the current situation that is being affecting the farm workers and farm dwellers. We welcome the research, all of us. But now there has to be, for me, if I'm listening properly, and if I also look at the situation that is currently impacting on the farm workers, what is their short-term solution? Because that research is going to come up with recommendations, but what is their short-term solution in making sure that those farm dwellers are being protected? Because I believe that they should take an initiative from their side. Not, it must not come from the other side, other part of the world. They must also take an initiative on that one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
AgriSA knows that Mr. Musa is speaking as a member of parliament, holding you to account on those matters. But instead of making a discussion between AgriSA and Mr. Musa and myself, we're going to open it up to everybody to participate. At this point, perhaps what we need to do is to ask each and every department. We invited invited 12 departments of government to participate in this discussion. And we want each and every one of them to tell us, yeah, what what is it that has to happen to make these conditions what they ought to be? And what are they doing about it? I'm also going to ask LRC, Women on Farm, AFRA, and others, what are the conditions that they see when they go there? Because it's important at the end of this meeting that everybody must play his or her part in making sure that the workers' conditions on the farms and farm dwellers improve. That is what we committed to do. Can we now ask the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to help us with the question?
I fully agree with the sequence that we are going to follow. But now let's talk to the presentation, because AgriSA is saying to us they appreciate and they welcome the research that is being proposed. They also welcome the mediation process. They also, all these issues that have been raised there. And they indicate to us, as from the meeting of the 16th, they are informing this meeting of the progress that they have made. Now, I was going to suggest that let's stick to this for now, for this round. They have to tell us, because they have raised issues to say they welcome everything, but they would like to see, the research, not to only focus on the evictions. And the question is saying, currently we are faced with a situation where farm workers are being evicted. Human Settlements is finding itself in a challenge to address indaba zezindlu zabantu abadisposed by the farm workers. But now we are saying, what are they proposing? So that we are going to own what they are proposing in a short term, because the research is not going to be something that is going to resolve the issues of the farm workers, but this is an issue that is between the farm workers and the employers. It's between them. Now we are giving them an opportunity. We are not pushing them. We are not pushing, putting any pressure. We want them to say it, but no, we are suggesting that in the meantime, we are waiting for a broader research work. We are proposing that to meet the government, because we are the government. Parliament is overseeing government, but at the same time, we are the government of South Africa. We want the conditions of the farm workers changed. But we want a solution from them so that we can assist them in implementing that solution. All the departments, all these people, they are going to tell us what is their strategy in ensuring, but pressurizer. Because it seems as if government is putting unnecessary pressure to the farmers. So that London is telling that we own this, we agree, they must put forward something. What would they like us to assist them in ensuring that these farm workers are not evicted currently, and then we look forward to research work.
I'm persuaded. Well motivated. Ms. Crosby?
Chairperson, thank you. I'm going to put a bit of perspective before I try and answer directly. Honourable Member, this meeting is not about AgriSA and its presentation. The previous meeting was also not about AgriSA. It's about all the stakeholders that are involved. And the solution to this sensitive problem also lies, I believe, in a partnership approach. So although we do have some ideas, and I will mention them just now as to solutions that we can look at, I think we must really all try and find a solution. We're not saying wait for the research. There are a lot of things happening, and I tried to put that in the presentation. Currently, there is the negotiations within the green paper process. the minister went so far to agree that we could even try and pilot the Land Rights Management Board. Now, the Land Rights Management Board is the institution set up by the Green Paper, which will take over a lot of the functions that are presently being exercised by the Land Rights Management Facility. But it's foreseen that it will be more stakeholder-driven. Now, that will be an opportunity, for example, to intervene. If there is a particular problem in an area where there is a threatened eviction, where a number of people stand to be evicted, and you can get the stakeholders involved through mediation, through involvement by the government, by organized agriculture, by the trade unions, the municipality, at that local level, then there is a very good chance that you may be able to either stop the eviction or to find alternative solutions, including alternative housing for the people if they are then evicted. So that is one solution that we have proposed, even to the minister, that we think can work. But it is a very complex problem. We probably need to also look at some legislative amendments to the existing legislation, and the department is looking into that presently together with the stakeholders. And what we have offered on many occasions also is that when information comes to the fore of disputes on farms, whether they be about working conditions or evictions or whatever, and they are picked up by the trade unions, by the NGOs, then if they could contact the department, contact us, enlighten us about what's going on there, then once again it's possible to jointly try and broker a solution for that specific problem that does exist. So, Honourable Muma, I hope that answers your question. If it doesn't, I'll try again.
The interim measure, according to Ms. Crosby, is that if there is any eviction that is experienced by anybody, it has to be brought to the attention of the department, of the farmers' unions and the trade unions, to make sure that all of them come together to find a solution to that problem. Evictions, Ms. Crosby, in most cases happen in more remote areas where most of these stakeholders you're talking about may not necessarily be readily available. What else can be done to make sure that the eviction is... I was aware that this discussion on evictions could take the bulk of our time. That is why I wanted participation from all stakeholders. But I see three hands now. People want to come in into this particular debate. Can we move in this order? It's you, ma'am, and it's the lady here. And, wait. The two of you must wait. Ma'am, you lead. You lead from the front.
Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, Ms. Sulani is the convener of women in parliament, and also she's coming from the women, children and disabilities. Come, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson.
All women in parliament. All. Not only ANC women.
Thank you, Chairperson. I lasted to be in this committee 5 years ago when I was in the NCOP. It's so interesting that even today we're not achieving what we wanted to achieve. I'm not happy, and I'm still going to further ask questions through Agri South Africa. You know, we do have vulnerable women and which are workers on the farms and children and the rest workers. But we do have some legislation. I don't know. I even forgotten how many years that we are in government, but we are still talking about this eviction of vulnerable women, children, and the rest, the workers. And today, people who are presenting farmers are still not giving us some of us being champion of looking after some, looking after women, special women with the children and the people who are disabled. I'm not sure, I'm not happy whether our laws which were putting, being overlooked by farmers of South Africa. And I was not aware that UAGRIS South Africa is still going to present this. I was thinking that they will be telling us that they've minimized that to the farmers that they are presenting. But the cry is still like that. And I don't expect that what, you know, departments who are here, they were still going to put and defend the laws of this government. But this thing is continued. And we need to interrogate to UAGRIS South Africa. Are farmers prepared to adhere to the labor laws, even in the laws that are present of South Africa? We cannot, at this age and age that we still have horrible reports of farmers that every day, every month, they are taking women, put them on the street. And sometimes I'm seeing that the laws of government are not taken serious. And when we're saying this, I was not part of the committees that they've taken rounds, especially in the Western Cape. The horrible report that we've been reading out of the committees that they were visiting, farms, the conditions that they are staying on. Before going to ask other department, I'm not sure whether can they tell us why farm workers are still living in these conditions, why are farm workers are still not paid, why the farm workers are evicted every now and then without an alternative place to be put on. I'm suspecting that in each area, maybe there are municipalities. If other areas, it's not municipalities, the local authorities, they suppose firstly before they do this eviction to have negotiations with the relevant stakeholders in order that we cannot see women sleeping outside with kids without a shelter upon themselves. I don't think that it's correct. And out of this meeting, I want to go and report fully to the Multi-Departments Caucus about the report which UAGRIS South Africa is giving us assurance. And I would love a person that even Labour cannot contribute, except Labour will be saying what we are saying, that this is out of order. This, we have got laws. So I don't know whether other departments, what are they going to say? They're going to complain like I'm complaining that since 1994 until today, we still have these victims. But on the lighter note, we need to hear from themselves, what must we do in order that these farmers must respect the dignity of the human beings, which are workers, especially vulnerable women and children. Thank you.
I'm very sorry. We are now correct, and we are happy that members have arrived. I've got five hands on the topic. I know that people, Ms. Crosby continues to say, this sensitive matter. It does evoke emotions, Ms. Crosby. And the members, being members of parliament, they have to make sure that they do something about it. That is why I'm allowing people to say whatever they want to say as much as I wish. At the end, we must come up with solutions at the end of this meeting. So, Agri-SA, you will try again later on, but I'll get all the members to speak first. But you will have to try again. Try harder this time. What is the message that has been sent out to the farmers to insist on stopping evictions? You remember that farmers will tell you that the laws of South Africa, that is perhaps the reason why Ms. Crosby continues to say there must be legal or legislative amendments. Because the law says there is a legal eviction, and then there's an illegal eviction. And the test as to whether it's legal or not is only done in court. But not all evictees have access to the court to test that eviction. But let's deal with that at some point. We'll then get Inkosi Yam, Nkosi Zulu, then Bengu Chief Whip, Ntate Ntaphane, and then it be the lady and the lady at the back there. That's right. In that order, please.
Ngiyabonga, Sir. Ukuqoshwa kwabantu emapulazini kwenzeka ngendlela efanayo yonke indawo. Uyabona, umnikazi wepulazi ufika abe nalo muntu asebenze kahle naye. Bese kuthi ekugcineni ma ngithi ukwenzeka kwale nto yohlalo kwenzekala ngendlela efanayo kuyo yonke iSouth Africa. Bafika basebenze kahle bobabili, bese kuthi ma esekhulile lo okade esebenza la eplazini bese exoshwa, noma kuthi umnikazi weplazi alithengise iplazi. Bese kuthi makufika omusha othi take over, bese bakhipha bonke laba bese funa abakhe abasha. Manje ngabe kungcono ukuba lo be-Agri-SA usitshela nje iqiniso ukuthi bangaxazulula kanjani bona laba bantu bebobabili. Thina singafana nama-mediators ukuthi bahlale phansi bakubone ukuthi ixazululwa kanjani lento, bengabheki ukuthi kuqhanga ngapha, ngoba vele bahleli ndawonye. Uyakubeka lapho ukuthi ukuxoshwa kwabo kuze kuvimbele inqubekela phambili eplazini kuyamthinta umnikazi weplazi kwiprofiti yakhe, kuyamthinta lo ngenhlalo yakhe. Manje ke bona bobabili bakwenze baxoxe bakuncoma ukuthi kuvinjwa kanjani lokhu. Sengake ngayongcwaba umuntu uhlalo eseqede 13 months esemakhazeni umnikazi weplazi alo uba angcwatshwe eplazini lakhe, amathuna kuba onke khona lapho. Leso simo esinjengaleso sidalwa ubukhuni balona osuke esengene eplazini esethi iplazi ngelami, amalungelo alona kungcono awabulale njengawaqele. Mina bengubuka kanjalo hlala ukuthi akube yibona abasho ukuthi lento ivinjelwa kanjani izwe lo, ngoba kucishe Agri-SAA lento mhlawumbe uyishaya umthetho ukuthi niyawuyenza kanje mase niyenza, ngoba yenziwa ngendlela efanayo. Ngiyabonga, Sihlalo.
It's very difficult to interpret all of it, but I'll summarize. The situation that happens in evictions arises when the farm worker gets too old to perform effectively in the production on the farm. Alternatively, if the farm is sold and the new farmer does not want the workers on the farm, and then eviction takes place. Agnes A must tell us how these two conditions can be changed permanently so that it does not happen. Well, Ms. Crosby, whether you're talking about legislative amendment or not, the farmer still has this confrontation, and Prince Zulu is saying, if the farmer feels that my productivity is going low, my competitiveness is being destroyed by the inability of the workers to perform their functions, I must get rid of this person. But would they look after the rights of those workers that have to leave from the farm? And that's a difficulty. Also, there's a third problem where a person can die on the farm and will not be buried on the farm because the farm worker says, this is my farm, this is not a graveyard. And he cited an example of somebody who was in the mortuary for 13 months, could not be buried because the farmer refused to bury that person on the farm, even though there are other graves on that farm already. But this farmer says, not a graveyard, not on my farm, over my dead body. Agri-SA must make a contribution. What is the solution to the problem? Agri-SA did put down the gauntlet and said, we must come with solutions ourselves collectively. It is not an agricultural farmer's responsibility alone, but collectively we must say what the solutions should be. But this meeting is still saying, Ms. Crosby, please, Agri-SA must come up with proposals or solutions to the problem. Ndadentapang.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, as they have said, this is going to take the big time of our meeting, the eviction. Actually, it's not a question. It's just to find out from Ms. Crosby whether she had seen the Lawyers for Human Rights finding on these evictions. I'll just mention two in their findings. That farm dwellers continue to be constructively and illegally evicted. The second one is granting of court orders without suitable alternative accommodation. In her response, she said, if there is a problem, it must put to their attention as an institution. As you have correctly said, so Honorable Chairperson, some of these things do not come to court. And to me, it might not be a solution to deal with the problem when it arises. Or else, if there is a solution, it might be a cold comfort, that solution. Is it possible, Ms. Crosby, that you can workshop in the interim, you can workshop your members about these illegal evictions? And I'm finding it difficult to understand the granting of court orders without alternative accommodation, because I've long been out of practice. But as far as I know, there is a prevention of illegal eviction, shortly called PIE Act. So these farmers, I understand, they need to be workshopped. You cannot, in terms of that act, you cannot evict a person unless you are sure that there is an alternative accommodation. So it means, I wonder how the court also can grant such orders. So what I'm saying is, what I want to find out from you, Mrs. Crosby, is it possible for you to workshop your members about evicting people from the farmers, from the farms? Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Prince Zulu is the one who talked about evictions on farm. Ndadentapane, our chief whip here, is from UDM, responsible for making sure that members of the UDM perform. But he also makes us all perform here in our committee. Yes, ma'am?
My name is Tandi Swartpoy. I'm from Women on Farms. I would like to tell you or give you a picture of what is happening with these evictions, because I'm dealing with evictions on a daily basis. If the lady who spoke about evictions can come and see the picture of a family sitting on the side of the road with babies. Last week already, there was a family who was evicted. There was a baby six months old. That baby was sitting, the goods were put on the side of the road with the family. And we have to sit with those people, try to get alternative accommodation, which is not very easy for us to get the municipality to give people alternative accommodation. So if SA is saying that they are going to be there, the farmers union and also the trade unions, then I'm failing to understand when are they going to be there, because evictions are still happening even while we are sitting here. So they must give us a solution that will help our women and our children who are being seated on the side of the road with nothing or nowhere to go, with no food, with no alternative accommodation. We need solutions that can help our people, because people are suffering on a daily basis, especially women and children.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sarboy. Ma'am?
I'm Fatima Shabuddin. I'm also from Women and Farms. I want to share our experience with the portfolio committee members. My organization has worked with AgriSA since in the entire post-apartheid era. I assume that not all the portfolio committee members have had that benefit. So I will share our memory of the interaction with the hearings and findings on human rights violation. At every report that's released, they contest the methodology. And the problem is that there's nothing new that the hearings are telling us. The Human Rights Watch report did not tell us anything that the South African Human Rights Commission hearings, both of them, did not tell us already. And various researches by various NGOs have showed that human rights violations are extensive. The question that we think the portfolio committee should be asking is, what systems is the industry putting in place to monitor its farmers? Because there's absolutely nothing. I mean, they're not spending a cent on it. So we're happy about the ILO research, but the truth is that the ILO research is also our money. It's the membership money paid by South Africa, so it's not free either. The reality is that South Africa is categorized, it's labeled by European purchases of agricultural produce as a high-risk country because of the history of labor in our country. It's uncontested. It's not a wild emotional claim by farm worker organizations. For this reason, retailers in the European market who purchase agricultural produce from South Africa require ethical audits to ensure they need to guarantee that to their consumers that workers have not been exploited, and that's for a reason. But in all of this, the agricultural producers in our countries don't spend a cent. They sit in luxury of contesting our findings without being able to produce a single credible shred of data to the contrary. So the point is, they keep coming to Parliament and say, report human rights violations to us. My organization have done that. We've got a file full of letters that says, we're investigating. We've never heard back from them. And the truth is, let us not play games with each other. What are they going to do if they find the farmers guilty? We wrote to them and said, a Luhamka farmer 2 years ago raped a 13-year-old girl. He murdered her and he put her body in the water tank. I mean, it's uncontested. This man is in prison today. He was an AgriSA member. What did they do? They didn't even make a public statement condemning him. They're not going to say anything about evictions and other human rights violations. So there's no credibility to the things that they say in this room repeatedly. What we're saying is, in addition to that, and we turn our attention to government as well, because our government doesn't have any tracking mechanism in place either. And we are concerned about the want of research intervention that will paint a particular picture of a labor condition that's rapidly changing. When we came into our democracy, we had almost 2,000 farm workers. We now have 600,000, and it's dwindling. And it's also highly casualized, highly feminized. So if we do research with ILO money today, what it tells us today will just be about today. We need a longitudinal tracking mechanism that tells us about the movements of on and off farms, legal and illegal, because the line is also so blurred. We've done research on evictions in Rosenwald, which we'd be happy to share with the portfolio committee, which shows that workers are just so harassed by farmers. Eventually, they just leave. So there isn't even a space for a legal process to run its course. And when you ask, is it legal or illegal, no one can say because it didn't even reach the court. But workers have left the farm. So the point is we must place more pressure both on government to tell us, because on what is Department of Rural Development basing its interventions on farm dweller tenure rights? It has no data. It relies on NGOs, and like AgriSA, when we present our data, they question the methodology, the validity and so on, but yet they're not spending a cent on tracking. So we do want to urge the Portfolio Committee to put pressure on both of these institutions, our own departments and the industry, to put in place the resources to actually track the conditions, the human rights conditions of farm workers in relation to evictions, but also the full range of rights that workers should be entitled to. Thank you.
Everybody's got a right to speak here, and you will speak. There's no free lunch. I noted you, but it's a fun feeling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some brief comments from the International Labour Organization. First of all, if we get involved in the research, it's not ILO money that's paid or part of the membership fee. It comes from a donor country, so it wouldn't be linked to any monies that is emanating from South Africa or fees paid. First of all, one of the challenges we have in South Africa that we're finding from the ILO, and it's in the sub-region, is that our law is very good in many instances. It's the application of the law and the monitoring and evaluation systems that are lacking. And if you look at the Labour Inspection Unit through the Department of Labour to monitor many of the issues that are being discussed here, these services are inadequate. And therefore, we need to find two other mechanisms that will assist the parties in dealing with some of these issues. The one is to look at a dispute resolution mechanism that is much cheaper and quick and easy to deal with. Some years ago, we started looking at forming something for domestic workers. It's something where you take your candidate lawyers, people who are able to move into the rural areas, and there's many mechanisms we can find if we talk to the Law Society of how we can find an alternative dispute resolution mechanism in dealing with, on a very quick basis and cheap basis, complaints from farm workers. The second one is looking at the regulation of the industry. Because of the lack of inspectorate, it doesn't help that we talk to Agri South Africa and say they must regulate their farmers. It's always going to be accusations of a subjective approach. And therefore, you need to find a much more balanced approach to it. And therefore, the model of co-regulation, which we haven't used in South Africa yet, becomes a vehicle that we need to explore. That means you have unions, government, and the farmers together on a regulatory mechanism of where there's compliance and non-compliance. And one can look at how one finances such a regulatory model. Judge Andre van Niekerk in the Labour Court put together a model some years ago for the security industry, which is quite adaptable to the industry that we're talking about now. Just to conclude, I think it's important that one looks at the way going ahead. If you look at the National Development Plan, the scenarios there have shown an increase in the employment of people in South Africa by quite a substantial number on farms. And therefore, we need to find mechanisms that are going to deal with even more numbers than what we're dealing with now if we follow the National Development Plan scenarios. As the ILO, what we can offer is that we can offer a neutral basis. We have people that can come in and assist with research, with monitoring and evaluation models, with best practice models. But the most important part of the ILO is that we would do it only on an inclusive basis and not exclusivity, meaning that we'd have the unions on board, we'd have NGOs on board where necessary, and also the employers and government. Now, if we do that and we walk this path, then we can come up on a systematic basis of saying what is the first objective, the second and the third, rather than trying to do this as a one big exercise at the initial stages. We can identify some low-hanging fruit, we can look at some of the areas that are more urgent, and so we can develop the research and findings as we go along. And to answer the Honourable Member about what happens about the stuff that you find along the way, we can build in a mechanism that as we find issues that are of a problematic nature, we address them then and there or send them to the correct address to be dealt with. So there's many ways we can deal with this, but the most important aspect of all is to determine the terms of reference. that everybody agrees to the same terms of reference. There is a project which I mentioned to the Honourable Speaker, Chairman of the Portfolio Committee, that Professor Eddie Webster at Wits is already starting to do some work with the provincial legislation of Gauteng, and we need to make sure that we don't run with different initiatives and try and coordinate that. And he's prepared also to come into the party if we find agreement. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to support the submission that was made by one member that landowners really do need to be workshopped by AgriSA. As an attorney who deals with landowners on almost a daily basis, where I represent rural farm dwellers in eviction matters, sometimes I'm highly appalled by the responses I get, because I prefer that before we proceed to court and drag legal proceedings, that I engage the landowner. I'd actually send out correspondences, make telephone calls, you know, try to mediate outside courts. But you find that it's either they are oblivious to existing legislation, or they don't want to engage with you on that level, and they totally shut you out. So you find yourself in a position where you force, you know, to go the legal route and approach the court doors. So I'd really appreciate, and I think most people in this room would appreciate, that the landowners are more educated and workshopped around existing legislation. And then the issues in rural farm areas also revolve around intricate human relations. So it would help if they'd have that legal background. Then I'd also would like to address the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, because there are mechanisms, systems in place that have been put to safeguard the livelihoods of rural farm dwellers. But I believe there's a failure in implementing. Just like we have a panel, the CTH panel, which is supposed to provide legal services for rural farm dwellers, legal services that are supposed to be free, legal services provided by government. But you find that people like I find myself in a position where I have 20 matters on my desk addressing legal issues for farm dwellers, and there's not enough checks and balances in place that make sure that such legal representatives are actually going out into the communities and providing such legal services. You know, these people are supposed to be there. These people are supposed to be accessible, but you find that community members don't even know that there are free lawyers that are put there to address land reform issues and address legal problems that farm dwellers might find themselves in. So I really think that data is available, systems are in place, but it's a matter of implementation and checks and balances, because the more bureaucracies that are created without solving the current systems will just be creating a recipe for flaws. We need to address the current systems and make sure that those systems are properly implemented before we create more bureaucracy. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, I appreciate that. But maybe it looks like the meeting is gravitating towards people sharing out their own practical experiences out there, and rather than people pontificating from a distance. Why don't we invite those that are practitioners out there to tell us exactly? That is what I was trying to do when Mr. Mbuza stopped me, because I was saying the departments that are here that have been invited, who are playing a role in this area in particular, they know what the law says. Now, there is an indication that there's a weakness in the law. Maybe the law is good, but the implementation is wrong or is flawed or weak. Let's deal with those solutions so that we stop the process from going forward or worsening beyond the point in which it is now. So that when we undertake the research, maybe let me give feedback on the issue of this research. this research is independent. It is not going to beg who wants it or not. The result is going to be for all South Africans. And what we would want the government to do is to say, here are the findings, here are the weaknesses. Can you then make laws that are going to block those weaknesses such that this phenomenon does not continue? So anybody who queries whether we should have the research or not should rest assured that it will go ahead, it will address the problem, it will also check what those weaknesses are so that we can deal with the solution at the implementation side. There is a huge problem of implementation of laws in South Africa. Whether you go to housing, you still find implementation is a problem. Whether you go to education, implementation is a problem. The laws are good. When you go to even rights of workers, implementation is a problem. So let's deal with the practical experiences and find the solution now. This is the time I will call upon FAU, our colleagues that are in the coal face of this problem. And with the assistance from them, we will come with solutions. And the lawyers can help us in court, but they can't help us under those working conditions on the farm.
Good morning, Chairperson, members. thanks very much for inviting us, and I think, Chair, we appreciate the spirit of partnership that the committee wants to pioneer at all times. I just introduced our comrades from FAU. On my right is Kafuddin Benjamin. He's from FAU, the Food and Allied Workers Union, working in the food industry, canning industry, on the farms in particular. He's our provincial education officer for FAU. On my left is Comrade Aaron van Willer, who's an organizer for FAU, specifically focusing on farms in the Western Cape. And then myself is Matthew Parks from COSATU's parliamentary office. I think, Chair, before I give over to my two comrades from FAU, who can give the practical day-to-day experience that they encounter, I think just from COSATU's side, a few broad issues. I think we definitely appreciate the spirit of partnership that Chairperson, the members from all parties have highlighted. I think we also appreciate from AgriSA the desire to find working solutions. But I think, Chair, it's as you said, and also as Women in Farms have said, and as the ILO has said, we've got the policies, we've got the legislation. We must just implement it. There's no mandate for any citizen of the country, be it a farmer or be it whomever, not to adhere to all the legislation of the country. We're 18 years into a democracy. The laws are very simple, despite what is said in the media about the labor laws being too onerous, too difficult for any business to comply with. They're not. Business makes a big issue about restrictive labor laws, but we've seen in a few years a million workers lose their jobs. So it's clearly not. It's not difficult to apply and adhere to laws. And the laws are there for good intentions. Occupational Safety and Health Act is there to protect people's lives and limbs. It's not a dictatorial or fascist legislation. It's a correct law. The minimum wage law, basic conditions of employment, labor relations, those are all progressive things that we would want all of our citizens to benefit from. Chair, I think as unions, we'll be fully supportive of any role to play. But that also means, and I think as Kafuddin and Aaron will say, that unions must be given full access to organized workers. There must not be issues of trespassing. We must not have issues of, and I want to say if my comrade here was assaulted by security guards last year for trying to resolve a labor dispute conflict between management and workers, and he was physically assaulted badly. And the police themselves then neglected to pursue the case for due diligence. And I think you may even remember about 6 years ago, one of the members of this parliament, Randa van Dierfer, was held at gunpoint when he went to visit one farm one election time. I don't think all farmers are like this. We want to avoid generalizations, but we really need a kind of a partnership. Chair, in terms of the research, I think we might also want to engage with StatsSA. They've also done a lot of research around food security amongst farms. You know, it's a difficult area to organize, as our colleagues would highlight better to us. But we're able just to tap into that expertise. I think they were planning, they gave us a presentation last year at NEDLAC, and they did allude to some research they would want to undertake in the farming areas I think, Chair, look, we're not populists. The Constitution is very clear, and it doesn't prohibit government also from fulfilling its roles. So we don't get excited when we hear people jumping up and down about nationalization, all those things. We need to be calm, cool, and unemotional, and deal with facts. There's nothing in the Constitution which robs government of its capacity to intervene. But if you go to areas like Kuruman and Post Hospital, and you hear from the Labor Department, they've only got one labor inspector for maybe 1,000 farms. We're setting ourselves to fail. Government really must really look at its capacity. I think the other issue, Chair, is that we must also appreciate the economic challenges that agricultural sector experiences. I think last year at the meeting that the committee held, Ruth Hall, if I'm right, gave very detailed stats, and I think Mr. Shabudin also alluded to it, about employment levels dropping by hundreds of thousands in the last 20 years, farmers being bought over by larger farms, and hundreds of thousands of farm workers losing their jobs and thus their housing and so on. And when we really look at government, what can we do to be more creative to provide support for a strategic economic sector? We provide such support for other sectors, electricity, ports, transport, food security is a strategic economic part of the country. And we can't just leave it to compete randomly with the EU and so on. Whilst we all know that the EU farmers are heavily subsidized, you'll find a cow in Europe gets, I don't know, the $10 a day, whatever it is. It's like a civil servant. So I think we need to also find a carrot and stick approach, that we give support to agriculture, but then we also require adherence to laws, progressive behavior, and so on. I think, Chair, the issue of alternative housing for us is a non-starter. You can't evict poor people who earn R1,000 a month, who've got no economic resources, no pensions, no money, no education, dump them by the side of a road, and they said the municipality must intervene, because municipalities have got their own crises. Their first crisis is to deal with informal areas, to deal with townships, backyards. They don't have emergency housing available. And you see when floods come in Cape Town every year, that alternative housing is a community center, which is not designed for human habitation. Same thing, you can't put people in church halls. I think the last issue, Chair, before my comments take from me, is that I think really government must also step up to its act, as the members are saying. You know, you'll see today's papers about the crisis in Frabo, and you will see what people in the community are saying about government must build the schools and so on. And one of the people there said, we've raised this issue with the MEC of Education, who was an MEC about 5 years ago. We can't wait now. They have the current MEC now intervening to build, deliver container classrooms to Frabo. We mustn't wait for people to burn into blockade N2. We're sitting on a time bomb. We'll learn from the mistakes of Zimbabwe, where we allow a crisis to precipitate a collapse. But I think, Chair, let me stop there and allow commoners to raise their own issues.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Everyone present. Chairperson, we will give some practical examples of what we're experiencing in terms of the hard copy that COSATU has provided us. As correctly stated...
Excuse me, Chief. Can I just check? Did everybody get a copy? It was circulated. All right, you can continue commenting.
We have experienced post-apartheid as well as before that, Chairperson, over the last 20 years, that there were massive retrenchments on farms. And as a result, Chairperson, we have experienced evictions, legal or illegal, and that has put an extra burden on the rural municipalities as well. And then you find that there's an increase in unemployment in rural areas. And once some of those workers are re-employed or they find employment, then those employment are of a seasonal nature, Chairperson. So our experiences also, and I want to take the liberty, Chairperson, to take it to the recent farm visits by the Labour Portfolio Committee, of which FAO was present on all those farms. All those farms FAO were present from the onset. FAO, as well as the Woodland Farms and other sister organizations, which is part of the Western Cape Worker Rights Coalition, we have proposed certain farms that could be visited, and fortunately, most of the farms that we have proposed have been visited by the Portfolio Committee. And on those farms, Chairperson, we started in the Citrus Dal area on the west coast. Then we moved to the Robertson Bonneville area, then Hoester, Rosenville area, and then we ended off on the Stellenbosch Paul area, Wellington, that area. On the first day, Chairperson, we found that on certain farms the conditions were of such a nature where not one farm was fully compliant. And after 21 farms over the 4 days that were visited, Chairperson, only one farm have, and the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee have indicated this through media statements, that only one of those farms, which is called Mooiplaas, in Afrikaans, Mooiplaas means beautiful farm. So maybe there's some connection to that. Only that farm was fully compliant in terms of all the labor legislation. So that gave us an indication. And Agri SA and Agri Western Cape officials were present on those farms, the Chairperson. So it gave an indication that the Labor Relations Act, as well as the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Health and Safety Act, either or were or in full were not complied with, Chairperson. And it's just a pity that maybe later, when I come to the slide later, we have not included any visuals, but we have some pictures, and we can circulate it, how some of the living conditions are being, or some of the living conditions that's been experienced by some of our farm workers in the Western Cape. We also found, Chairperson, that when the visits took place, it was found by it arose through questioning that some of the farm workers have indicated to the committee, as well as some of the farmers, that they have not seen the Department of Labor for a number of years. On one farm, Koran's Water, the farmer was quite forthcoming with information, and I think they were trying their best, their Chairperson, to assist and to abide by the legislation. I think there was one of the issues that they did not comply with was the issue of payslips. I think they left it to a consultant to do that for them. But it was found that the Department of Labor do not visit regularly, but the office is also not very far from there. It's in Glen William. So it's one of those issues. Sometimes we will criticize that the manpower is not there, Chairperson, but we can't criticize when the manpower is there, not very far from that, and then they do not exercise that enforcement role, Chairperson. Then also the long hours that workers work, it was found that they are being told that it is in season and they are not being paid overtime. My colleague and comrade will speak on the employment conditions with regards to the difficulties in organizing farm workers, as well as the at times hostility that we as a trade union and other trade unions experience, Chairperson, when organizing farm workers, and he will do that just after I finish. Now, the lack of access to farm dwellers, Chairperson, I think it's something that we should not take lightly. On this specific farm, this is the first farm that we have visited. The committee and all the visitors that were with, we broke in two, and then half of the committee went that way, and with the group and media, and the other half went a different way. So we spent about 3 hours per farm on a specific day, and we found it is very difficult. It is sometimes a kilometer or two from the main gate to where farm workers reside on the farm. So they have to walk to the gate, and then from there they must find themselves somewhere if they want to go to a clinic, etc. And it's not always possible to rely on the farmer. We also found, Chairperson, that on this farm we experienced a situation where there were some transactions that took place a few years ago where the farm changed hands. Some of the farm workers then looked for alternative employment. They were residing on the farm. They still are. They went for alternative employment. Some became crest teachers, some became handymen, etc., etc. And others, husbands and children, has passed on that worked on the farm. This farm is one of the biggest citrus producers in the southern hemisphere, providing the best citrus in the world to the northern hemisphere. And we found, Chairperson, that most of the people, if not all of the people that reside on the farm, do not have employment on their farm. Based on, there's a power struggle between the occupiers or the residents on the farm, the tenants, and the farmer, which is a group of farmers, which is they're producing citrus. And all the workers, most if not all the workers that work on the farm, do not reside on the farm. And the conditions are, in terms of, when I say conditions, the living conditions, Chairperson, is of such a nature, Chairperson, we that love our pets very much, won't let them sleep there. And I can just send you pictures, Chairperson, to yourself, to satisfy yourself, and you can just scroll to your right, then you will see what we're referring to, Chairperson. And I'll pass it on now. You'll just give me a minute. You can just pass on and then scroll to the right. And we found, Chairperson, that the water, and I took the sample, Chairperson, and unfortunately, the portfolio committee indicated these people begged us to come have a look when we had the meeting. These workers come begged us to have a look. And unfortunately, the portfolio committee on labor decided that that is out of their scope because it's part of human settlements and land reform. And we were about to leave. I was the last person in the car, Chairperson, in the convoy that they had to leave. Somehow, one of the women persuaded us to just come have a look at the conditions. And I'm actually glad today, Chairperson, that I went. And we took a sample. We took a sample of the water, and I handed it over to a representative afterwards when we got to the hotel, to a representative of Human Rights Watch, just to show, Chairperson, the type of water. Now, if you look at this water, Chairperson, you see it's clear water. It's clear water. That water that came out, Chairperson, out of that, I don't know where they found out of the pipe, was brown. And people had to wait, Chairperson, for about, and what we've done, I shook it. I shook the water bottle. It was the same sample, it's on there. And it took about
for the water, for that muck in that water, about 45 minutes just to come lay the bottom. And then once it is at the bottom, then it's about this far. But then it's still not clear to you, so it's dirty inside. And that is the type of water that these workers were using to drink. And then they, once the muck is at the bottom, then they throw the top part over to see if they can boil it. And you could see that the people were sick. In the pictures, you can see the people are unhappy. There's a power struggle there. The employer do not want to take responsibility for these people. And as a result, they are being punished by the right to clean potable drinking water, chairperson. We also found that if there's abuses on the farms, then they rely on the farmer to call the police, or they have to leave at night and walk far distances either to the councillor or to the police, and then there's always someone in the police station that takes sides with the farmers, etc. And once again, Chairperson, we want to reiterate and files on record in numerous portfolio committee hearings, Chairperson, and we even indicated in media statements, we're not saying all farmers are bad. They are rogue farmers, Chairperson. And I want to say verbatim, it is those rogue farmers that not just us, but Agri SA, if they are members, they must take them to task. They must take them to task, Chairperson. And just before I give over to my colleague, Chairperson, the initiative that FAO, as well as other organizations that assist us, Women on Farms, Sikula Sonke, the Center for Rural and Legal Studies, we have joined forces with organized business in terms of with the ethical trade initiatives, Chairperson. We believe it's a very powerful tool for us to ensure that the minimum basic legislation and conditions of employment, etc., living conditions, can be complied with. It's a framework where it's an initiative where once a farmer sells his produce overseas, that he must comply with those conditions. So already there's some responsibility taken away from the Department of Labor, not completely, but they can direct the energy somewhere else. Now we found, Chairperson, where certain things had to be complied with, then Agri SA's members or some of their members, or they instruct their members not to be part of the process. We're trying to work with organized business. There was also an initiative started some time ago, Chairperson, whereby the same organizations were part of an initiative. It was started by the retail group Tesco to come up with a dispute mechanism on farms, and this is possibly what Mr. Van Vieren is talking about. But you find, Chairperson, that you have a situation where Agri SA or organized farmers do not want to take responsibility, or they want to take ownership of everything but not responsibility for the outcomes of this. And I want to take this opportunity, Chairperson. And while I was sitting here, I was listening to speakers and honorable members that make submissions. One thing we tend to overlook, Chairperson, is we look at what is in front of us. There's water to drink, and then there's a juice to drink. This comes from a farm, Chairperson. The flavoring, if it's not whole apples, but it comes from a farm. It comes from the Elgin Gavau area. If you look at the refreshments outside when we came in, most of those things, if not all, come from the farms, Chairperson. And it is sold by retailers who buy this stuff biggest food manufacturing producers. It could be Pioneer Group, it could be the Tiger Group, it could be Premier Foods. And these are the people that we must also take to task, Chairperson. Where's the ethics in buying these raw materials, if you like, the grain, the fruit, etc.? Where's the ethics and morality in that, Chairperson? If we continue and see how the exorbitant increases that CEOs of companies earn, then you ask yourself, how are we seriously addressing the issues of farm workers? Where's the justification? What value has been added since that fruit has left on a truck that justifies that type of money earned by these CEOs and these top level management chairperson? But I'm glad, Chairperson, that there's also the issue of safety on farms. FAO was part, just after the murder of the late Eugene Terre Blanche, FAO was part of consultations with the current Minister of Safety and Security, the Honourable Najim Tetwa, where we supported the Rural Safety Plan. Chairperson, and we find that, I never come here for myself, Chairperson. I'm not a farm worker, but this is something. And Matthew, my colleague and comrade, mentioned to it, and I told myself, if he didn't mention it, I would have mentioned it myself, because we believe this is a rural issue, Chairperson. That yes, I was viciously assaulted, Chairperson, for doing work that the police were supposed to do, Chairperson. And these people, some of the people still need to be arrested. So if I, as a person that's engaging and involved in trade union work in the rural areas, Chairperson, then I ask myself, what happens to farm workers that believe they have the right to challenge something? And then we hear, someone has known he's moved to the Free State, but people in the Free State don't know where these people are. So I will leave it there, Chairperson, and give over to my colleague Aaron, just to give practical examples of what you experience on farms, as well as the hostility towards trade unions.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm Aaron Denvillag, contract organizer for Food and Ag Workers Union. I've been to a number of farms with a portfolio committee. One of them was Driefontein, where people were living in actual containers with no windows, no ventilation, nothing. And as you can recall, the Wellington area, it's getting very, very, very hot. And on the other farms in Marlow, the housing was actually in such a condition that it was life-threatening. And on that farm as well, they used the water that's coming out of the Berg River. There's no filtration on the water except for those that's going to the owner, the farm owner. And on the other farm, a mission, the people actually have to pay for their own maintenance on their houses. There is no flash toileting. They're still using the bucket system, which is to the union a very, very bad situation, because it can cause diseases and so on, but we as well as busy with that as well. And I'm not going to say much more, because my colleague Afilin already touched on all the other stuff. Thank you, Honourable Member Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm sure people have noticed that I deliberately allowed this space for people to share their practical experiences. But perhaps what we need to do now is to move forward. I don't want you to go and have lunch under the same attitude that we have experienced. Some of you have seen the pictures that have been circulated here. And to have to allow people to live under those conditions is really seriously problematic, to say the least. So maybe what we need to do is to say, okay, now, in the meeting that we had last year, a year ago, we heard these stories. We heard them. I was expecting that people are going to say, yes, progress since then. There's been a visible movement forward to improve those conditions. Ms. Lulani has said when she was a member of this committee 5 years ago in the NCOP, she heard the same stories. She's wondering why we're still hearing the same story 5 years later. We took a commitment, all of us, a year ago, that we will do something about it. And I hope nobody's going to stop me now, because I want the departments to tell us what is the government doing about these conditions. Remember that we have partners here that come from the unions. They're playing an oversight role from the point of view of workers. We have the NGOs who are also doing the oversight role from a humanitarian point of view. We've got AgriSA, whose members are supposed to be compliant with all the rules and laws and regulations. But we need the government to say, we are paid to do this, to make sure it does not happen. This is what we are doing. That's what we want now, ma'am. We do not want any stories now. We want to say, we want to hear people saying, this is what we are doing. In Glen William, we are told, there's an office very close by. Doesn't go to the farms. Nice in the office, air conditioning, but is employed not to sit in the air conditioned office, employed to go out into the farms. They don't go. Is the Department of Labor here? Your face. We will try and circulate the copy of the report of the Portfolio Committee of Labour. The FAO colleague has indicated that they've been there. They visited those 21 farms, but they visited the 21 farms in the Western Cape. In our portfolio committee, comrades from COSATU, we have agreed with our leader here, Mr. Mbuza, chairing that meeting, that we are not going to vilify the Western Cape as if it's the only province that's got these problems. We are going to visit all the farms throughout the country. And we are happy to hear that the Gauteng province is taking initiative to do Gauteng. So we are not going to do Gauteng, but we are going to liaise with Professor Eddie Webster to make sure that whatever findings they have there, or even whatever questions they are asking there, are the same questions that we want to ask too, so that we then share our outcomes and verify them. But we want to hear what the departments are saying. So I'm told that the Department of Labor is not here. Can we move on then to another? We will link with the Portfolio Committee Chair of Labour. Perhaps because we call them as rural development, they cannot come. They are answerable to the Portfolio Committee of Labour. So they cannot respond to us. We still are Parliament, whether they like it or not. Can we move on to human settlement? Yes, ma'am. Yes, Chief.
That's a clarification before the Parliament responds, Honourable Chair. Interpretation of FAO. There is a Vulia, that is not clear to me. Deductions from wages or from workers, what do they mean about this? I think it will be important for the department to comment on this as well.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chairperson, this is one of the farms, it's a practical example of what transpired. Honourable Member, what you find is that some of the farms are very remote. Then the farmer or two farmers have one shop on the farm where people purchase stuff, ordinary sam, maize meal, flour, etc. Then they purchase and they purchase, and then at the end of the month or the end of the week, and I need to remind people what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act stipulates with regards to deductions. Every deduction must be authorized by the employee, and you find that the employer deducts everything over and above the quarter amount of that person's wages or salary for the month. So it there is that violation, and at times it was found that the necessary authorization that may be given to the union or the legislative requirement of UIF is not complied with. So it's either there are instances where they deduct where they're not supposed to deduct, or they deduct too much, or they don't deduct where they're supposed to deduct. Chairperson, thank you.
So, but these deductions are reflected in the payslip.
Yeah, it's reflected on the payslip, or at times during the visit it was not reflected on the payslip, and that's where the compliance orders were issued that within 2 weeks, 40 days, they need to comply with those issues where they have not deducted, Chairperson.
But you are not reflecting on the quality of the content of the payslip. You are merely saying compliance is the question.
Payslip can be an envelope, or it can be a piece. You have your some workers' monies are paid into their bank accounts, and some farmers still pay. And there's nothing wrong with getting your money paid in cash, Chairperson. Some people still believe that. I still believe I need to be paid in cash. But where people are being paid in cash, it's when we say that the payslip is basically your salary or your pay advice slip. It can be a piece of paper like this, but it's just the type of deductions that's stipulated on there. Sometimes it is over then the 25% that is the requirement or the threshold that an employer can deduct. If my salary is 400 rand per person, and I pay 4 rand towards the UIF, then that leaves 96 rand for any other deduction, be it funeral policy or whatever, Chairperson. So then they go over and above the 100 rand that they deduct, just to cover the other purchases, etc., etc. So at times, workers have funeral policies, they pay the UIF, they have union fees, etc. Then the farmers still go over that 100 rand if the worker earns 400 rand per week. And it goes over that 100 rand to cover the debts that workers have bought. So they allow workers to buy, but they also deduct that money immediately, or they go over the normal deductions, Chairperson. I hope that clarifies it.
One last issue, clarify the issue of the consultant.
Chairperson, the issue of consultant. And hopefully this will allow us also to have an engagement with AgriSA and other farm organizations. You'll find consultants, Chairperson, that also run gung-ho, if you like, Chairperson. They ill-advise the farmers. We're not saying that us as a trade union or the other organizations that we work with, we know everything. But sometimes, Chairperson, the consultants, they ill-advise people. And at times we try to work directly with the farmer because we know that this, the advice that he's given is detrimental to the farmer as well as to the farm workers. And we have a position, and it's just an arrangement where we find that the farm worker is much better off without the union. Everything is being complied with. Then we will say it is your choice to belong to the union, so that we don't crowd the area or where another person is brought in. So at times we step back because we believe that the farmer will bring in this organization or this one-man band, and then one-man band, he runs the show in a specific area, and then they ill-advise. At times you feel that it's a vendetta that they have against farm workers or against rural workers, then they ill-advise the farmers. So it's also, they need to look at the quality of consultants that they employ, Chairperson.
Mr. Rosby?
Chairperson, will you allow me the opportunity to respond to some of the issues that were raised? How do you want to proceed?
You don't have to ask permission. That's exactly what we agreed to do. Everybody's got the right here to speak and defend positions or advance positions. But at the end of the day, we want solutions for farm workers and farm dwellers.
Yes.
That's what we're here for.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Chairperson, yeah. I didn't come here prepared to defend any positions or to defend the bona fides and the goodwill of AgriSA as an organization. But there were some issues raised, and it's difficult for me to respond to all of them because some of them or things that are happening on the ground that I don't necessarily have personal knowledge about. But I do think that there are a number of things that were raised that I need to deal with. First of all, the matter of legislation and compliance with legislation. Our organization has a very strong stance that we expect our members to comply with legislation. Because if we want to be protected as an organization and our members expect to be protected by legislation, we must also comply with the legislation. So I don't think there is, and also borne out by the visit of the Portfolio Committee on Labour, the majority of farmers are really trying their utmost to comply. And I think if you look at the report of the Portfolio Committee on Labour, you will see that the non-compliance issues relate mostly to health and safety, and issues that are not really that doesn't go to the heart of labour legislation in the sense that farmers do not want to comply or that there's a serious non-compliance. Very often it's because the farmers don't know exactly how to do a salary slip or whatever the case may be. There's a perspective to this, Chairperson. You must remember that many of the farmers are small business people. It's basically the farmer and his wife that often run the business. And they have to comply with all of this administration. So even though they try to comply in most instances, there may be one or two issues that they are not fully compliant with. And I think that's why our labour legislation also takes the approach of compliance orders, of getting people educated in order to assist them to comply rather than try and criminalise non-compliance immediately. So I think the perception has been created here to some extent that farmers do not want to comply, that they don't take the legislation of the country seriously. That really is not the case. There are bad apples, that we agree with that, and the law has to be enforced. Also, as far as evictions are concerned, eviction without a court order is a criminal offence, and AgriSA is on record for saying that where a criminal offence takes place, the law must take its course, and that farmer must go to court and, if necessary, receive a fine or go to jail or whatever if there's non-compliance with a law that contains a criminal sanction.
Chairperson, we do have a big problem with implementation. And I agree with what the lawyer here said, that very often we do have good policies, we have good laws, although there may be some gaps in the legislation, particularly ESTA, that we could look at amending. But implementation is a problem. And the only way that we're going to solve that problem is through a partnership approach. If we all try to solve, there's been a number of questions here. What is AgriSA going to do about this? What is your solution for this and that? It's not up to us to bring the solutions. It should be a joint effort. Although there is some things that we can do, and there was an accusation regarding the farmer particularly that committed the murder in the Karoo. That farmer was a member. His membership was immediately withdrawn when that came to the attention of the provincial affiliate, and a media statement was issued. So, Chairperson, I'm not going to try and react to each and every of these instances, but what I'm trying to tell you is there is a lot of goodwill from the organization. We do what we can. We also have a problem similar, I think, to the department and to Parliament in the sense that it's difficult for us to enforce. We can encourage our members, we can train them, we can set models of best practice, we can have codes of conduct, but we're not an enforcement agency, so we can't sit here today and guarantee you that each and every farmer will comply, because we simply don't have those powers. But as far as the training is concerned, I agree that, you know, there may be scope for a workshop. We have over the years done a lot of work to try and get the information out there. At one stage, we got some funding from the Norwegians, and we did training courses for both farmers and farm workers in labor legislation and the ESTA and labor tenants law. And that was quite successful. We reached a large number of farmers and farm workers, but that was a number of years back, so maybe, you know, there's again an opportunity, especially if the laws are going to change, to do some training. We have found that joint training sessions can be quite successful, where you have both the farmer and the farm workers in the same training session so that they get exactly the same kind of information. So we're willing, you know, to look at those kind of training programs and to assist where we can. The questions as to burial, we've got a protocol. We developed a protocol on access to farms for burial purposes, which I can make available to the committee. And I think on a lot of other issues, such as provision of infrastructure, access to water, etc., we do have viewpoints in writing that we also can make available to you. But the question around a lot of these issues, particularly when it comes to the provision of services, at the end of the day, is whose responsibility is it to provide those services, particularly if the people are not employed on the farm? The instance that was raised here about the one farm where the Portfolio Committee on Labour went, where the people lived in containers, those people, I'm told, are not employed on the farm. So is it the responsibility of the farmer to provide housing for people that are not employed there? Or is it the responsibility of Department of Housing or local authority, or who, those things must be clarified. And I think the Portfolio Committee on Labour at the last meeting that they had on this report did a lot of work on this, on saying, you know, there are problems with transport for children to schools. We think the Department of Transport should get involved. They started analysing the different responsibilities, and I think that's a useful exercise to go through. But at the end of the day, what we're hoping to get from this meeting is a clear way forward, a partnership approach where we stop the accusations and see what we can do jointly to better the situation.
Thank you, Ms. Crosby. Yes, Chief.
Hi, Chief. So all I want to say is, I think what's lacking, I believe, is that we run in a sense that it becomes an excuse to blaming and seeing things in a sense of being over-legalistic. I would really like AgriSA then, if it's then involved in this, their role, and I haven't heard it, about oversight, monitoring, and evaluation. I mean, from the perspective of a proactive role. You see, sir, because what's happening is that, and that should actually be in a continuous way. Also, my understanding of any farmer that's part of AgriSA, surely there is a code of conduct and there is the acceptance of being a mangrove, a member of AgriSA. What I'm also hearing now is also, and this is a bit disturbing, that only once the unions or people outside of the AgriSA and the farmers bring to the attention, then they will do something about it. So I would like much more of them oversight, monitoring and evaluation, a proactive role. What are they doing in that instance? Because they have members. Surely they should be aware of what their members are doing and not wait necessarily for the farm workers or the unions or whoever to come and point out the transgressions of these people. And I haven't heard that. And that, I think, would take us forward, and the discussion then would be more fruitful. So I would like the oversight, monitoring and variation role from AgriSA.
Thank you very much. At that note, we're going to the department. I noticed your hand. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry, Honorable Chairperson. I'm in the fishing industry, but I'm not in a farmer. So that can we put our issue in the shipping industry, but it's the same, it's one of the same what's happening in the farmers. Yonke lento iqhubeka ku farmers, yile iqhubeka kuthi ku fishing industry. Andiyazi noba nathi singazibeka na singanifika iingxaki zethu ezinjengezi zabantu basefama.
Ubuchule ngoba sikwenzele lula. Sikuqokelelele nezi departments eninoxhumana nazo directly apha. Saninika ithuba wena loba ungelunch nibabambele ecaleni nithi nansi imeko yethu. You see, because rural development ingaba iyamonzakalisa ululu Johnson ne-portfolio committee ye-agriculture, forestry and fisheries. Uba sompendlela izinto asuppose uba bayaziphendula. Sawuninika i-department le izawuthetha ngoku. Nenze i-appointment niye kuyo.
Yes, okay.
Inkosi Mhlekazi.
Inkosi Mhlekazi.
We call upon the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. What is it that you are doing, ladies and gentlemen, on this matter? Enforcement. You are not monitoring, Muslim, you are enforcing. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and everyone.
Given us a document, has it been circulated? Everybody's got a copy. Is that in China? Copies, please, stay ahead. Okay, please sit down, please. You can't come and do work for Parliament. There are people paid to do that work. I'm sorry to do that to you. Ms. Lan.
Chairperson, with due respect, I wanted to check if the department is here, and then this somebody wanted to ask question, why are they going to ask question outside? Because maybe even ourselves will be wanting to interact with the presentation. That's the problem that I'm having. While Chairperson is supposed to be here and he's not here, and will be interacting with the input, maybe. Can we say that each department must present and they must have a chance to interact with the presentation?
The most strategic entry point is the presentation. Yes. uskewanwa ikhupha kwi presentation wathi ufuna ubuza yena not wena. Not wena ma'am, yena. Uthi singabuza thina sisezinhlanzini. Kanti strategic entries this presentation.
Because
kunye thina ungakhathazeki. Ma'am, you have a platform.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I am Shibu Rampedi. I'm representing the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I'm here with my colleague, Ms. Middleton, who is heading the Fisheries Department. And she will add once I've done the presentation. Chairperson and honorable members, I would like to draw your attention to the document that we have circulated. The document gives a reflection of what the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has contributed towards addressing the issue of vulnerable workers. In this state, Chairperson and honorable members, we would like to draw your attention that 2 years ago, in July 2010, the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries convened a summit that was attended by farm, forestry and fisheries workers, and according to the document, you will note that more than 1,000 workers attended the summit. We had the benefit of the leadership being provided by the president, and some of you in the room might have attended the summit because leaders of government, farm dwellers, farm owners, organized labor and civil society were invited to that summit. Chair, I will not go through the rest of the document. I will just highlight the key issues and also state where we are as a department. I also wish to acknowledge the presentations that were made earlier that made a clear connection between the critical role that agriculture plays in food security as well as the contribution of agriculture to the export market. The observations that what we export has got to be linked to the practices on farms is quite valid, and I wish to state that the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is committed to working with everybody that is involved. We have had engagement with AgriSA and other stakeholders. The summit that was held in 2010 highlighted a number of issues. The issues that were raised at the summit are related to what we're saying here today. I will list those issues. In the summit, we all agreed that we need to pay attention to the social determinants that are at play when one looks at farm workers. We at length looked at the working conditions of farmers. We addressed the issue of security of tenure as well as empowerment and training. The committee should take note that the document that is provided is about 6 pages long. And the content of the document states very clearly what were the resolutions that were taken at the summit to address the challenges that were raised. Chair, the resolutions that were agreed upon at the summit resonate very well with the discussions here this morning. On behalf of the department, I would like to ask the committee to go to the last page of the document just to provide the committee with the overarching resolutions that were taken by the summit in July 2010. The chair and honorable members should take note that since that summit took place and we had the benefit of the Minister of Labor in that summit, we have been addressing the resolutions as work in progress. The committee should today take note that the ministers that were present in that summit, the ministers of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the Minister of Labor, the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, agreed that even though this committee has also noted that the existing legislation in South Africa is working, there is still room to amend to make sure that the issues that were raised by the summit are addressed successfully. Some of the issues that came out of that summit, if I now take you through the last page of the document, was that there was an agreement that the government has to pay attention to privatization of its own state assets.
because talking about worker conditions does not only refer to the private sector. The state also owns entities, and we will all agree that it is the intention of the state to also comply where it's where workers are involved. The summit also agreed that in terms of transformation, a lot of work has been done for forestry, a lot of work has been done for the agri-BEE, there are charters. However, a sector such as fishing still requires more attention, and Chairperson and Honourable Members, the summit agreed that we have to address the issue of transformation in fishing. The agreement of that summit, Chairperson, was that we should establish at a national and a provincial level a vulnerable workers unit within our Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The expectation, Chair, was that when we address these issues at the provincial level, we will have an opportunity to work with the Department of Labor, to work with local government, to work with other ministries such as cooperative governance and traditional affairs, to ensure that whatever we do, it's not government operating in silos, but it's government working together to deal with the issue of workers, their rights, and so on. One of the prominent resolutions that was made by that summit was that we need a judicial commission of inquiry to look at the conditions of workers in the fisheries sector. Therefore, the earlier comments by the gentleman that he wishes to raise matters of fishing is quite a critical issue. I can report to the chairperson that we have been working. The ministry has approached the presidency. We would like to explore what is possible, whether we go for a judicial commission or we just go for a formal inquiry. But the reality, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is that much as we've been talking a lot about the conditions on the farms, the conditions in the fishing industry also require everybody's attention. We have also committed as a department that we will consider taking a subsectoral approach when it comes to fishing as an industry. The minister has committed to starting a forensic investigation into the conditions in the squid industry as a starting point, whilst we go for the more formal process of really paying attention to the conditions that the fishing sector workers are subjected to. Chairperson, I would like to conclude. My colleague will add that as a ministry, we are quite encouraged by what has been said here this morning. We fully support the intention by the ILO to assist in dealing with issues of workers, and we want to state for the record that we are, like everybody saying, that non-compliance with the current legislation is not acceptable. Chairperson, you might maybe with honourable members say the summit took place 2 years ago, and has there been sufficient progress since then? I would like to submit on behalf of the minister that the ministry has a commitment in place. The ministry is willing to work with partners, and the ministry is willing to listen to all the stakeholders, because at the end of the day, if what we produce as agriculture, forestry, and fisheries cannot be marketed because of unethical conduct, then it means we will not be taking South Africa anywhere in terms of social and economic development. Chairperson, Honourable Members, thank you. I will hand over to my colleague. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sue Middleton. I'm the Acting DDG for Fisheries Management in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I'm not going to take up much of your time. I do want to agree with the colleague sitting opposite that the conditions of workers in the fishing sector requires urgent and urgent attention, and that the labour conditions and the conditions of employment in the sector are as serious and concerning as those facing farm workers and probably domestic workers as well as some of the most vulnerable workers in South Africa. As my colleague has said, we are talking to the presidency about commissioning a formal commission of inquiry into the fishing sector. And as you know, only the presidency can appoint a judicial commission of inquiry. So this is an engagement that we are having with the presidency. The Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries held public inquiry, a public hearing a year ago in I think it was June 2011, where evidence was led by stakeholders in the fishing sector, and particularly rights holders, workers, as well as small-scale fishers. And those hearings are documented, and we're working together with the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to address the most critical issues as a matter of urgency. So that is a work in progress. As my colleague has said, we have commissioned and we've already started on an urgent investigation into the squid industry, which is probably the industry where there is just such blatant exploitation that it cannot be tolerated any longer. So that commission has started. That will be followed up by an investigation into the West Coast rock lobster sector, and these will all feed into the judicial commission of inquiry into working conditions in the fishing sector in general. Yes, and then lastly, we are having ongoing engagements with FAWU. Around these issues, and in fact we have a meeting set up with FAWU in the Eastern Cape for next week. So I think just to state that some of the problems, the challenges that are facing protection of farm workers would be applicable to the fishing sector, and that would include capacity to enforce, the capacity of the Department of Labor to do inspections and follow-up, the capacity of SAMHSA, the South African Maritime Association, who actually regulate conditions at sea, their capacity to enforce is also of concern. Chairperson, I'll leave it there.
Honourable members, yeah, the ladies, I present them to you. Go ahead, Honourable Dapan. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I don't know, just my first question is answered, because I was to ask how long has this been, this resolution has been, actually she has already said it's 2010.
In a song, how long has this been going on?
Yes. Now, what I want to find out now, I'm not clear as to how far the implementation has gone. And the last question is, who is responsible to see that these resolutions are implemented? In other words, who is to account for this, if there's any?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Ms. Wanyamabil.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's not a question, it's a comment. Number one, Chairperson, when looking at these recommendations, you know, they don't have the time frames. So recommendations such as this one, they're just, you know, open-ended, because you can't monitor whether the department is able to implement the resolution of the summit. Secondly, it's just a concern that when listening at the presentation and also looking at this resolution, an indication is that there's lack or no progress with regards to the implementation
of this resolution. And you know, when people present their problems, they expect the department to act. Then if you take long time to implement the resolutions, you know, at the end of the day, people will lose trust. Now that the committee that has been established, maybe some of those people that they will engage have attended this summit, you know, they will not take this the oversight of the committee very serious, because they will say that we attended the summit, it was a talk show, then the other one came, we talked about our problems, then now with the committee, we're talking one and the same thing, but there's no one who's coming up to assist us. I think the challenge with this recommendation, you know, they're just open-ended, there's no time frame, there's no progress at all, according to me, Chairperson.
Yes, Ms. Tambusa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Seeing any presentation. Chairperson, I think the summit made critical observations on other issues that affect the workers in this industry. One of them is basic services. Now we are in 2012. The summit was in 2010. I just want to check from the department what steps have been taken in ensuring that there's a coordinated effort from this department as well as other departments in ensuring that as they are also implementing agents of government, trying to make sure that these issues are addressed. Have they conducted an oversight or a planning session together in ensuring that these issues are addressed? Okay, thank you.
No, Chairperson, when this 50% that I'm seeing in this department, I'm assuming I've seen two strong women presenting. Unlike with my union, I've seen that each gender is not represented today. Cosette, Frau, and the rest, I've noticed that. So I'm thinking that gender it's there whilst I'm seeing two women, because we're always not there. So there's nothing that I'm going to raise much, except that when you were giving us this nice report and the conclusion, you were saying that we are expecting that we'll be asking really, you know, things that were raised, guaranteed of access to burial sites, as we have heard, Umdani Nkosi Ngokunayo, that somebody was kept in mortuary for a decade. So this department has got that resolution, but the problem really, you said nothing, even if two or three of those things that we have tried to address, ILO and the other visitors, they've said government, your monitoring tools, your implementation. So it shows us that we do sit in this workshop with good legislation and then implement us. So I'm emphasizing, because if you have done something you were supposed to do, but if not, Chairperson, a time frame that you must call them to tell this committee and these people who are sitting here what have they done after what we're saying today, because they've left an open ended 2010 resolution, no time frames. I ask you with your intelligence that we must put frames, put time frames for themselves, that they must come back in this kind of forum to give us how far are they. Maybe they cannot do everything, but if not today, we'll just leave this thing, it will happen with due respect of each department. But now it is here, and we appreciate it that they've taken decision of such kind time frames, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I've been warned that I've been making you sit the whole morning without a break. I noticed that. And I've been told that I should allow for a comfort break. But I'm scared. It's 12 o'clock now, and people may want to run away and do their shopping because it's a holiday tomorrow. But nobody is leaving here unless that person has made a commitment to doing something about the issues we're dealing with here. If you disappear, we will never invite you again. I can guarantee you, we'll never come back here again. Women on farms, ma'am.
Chairperson Sizani, we are very concerned about the farm worker summit. People will remember that we had an equally radical land summit in 2005. We know less than the president stood in front of us at that summit and agreed with us that willing buyer, willing seller doesn't work, and we are 7 years down the line. Now, for people who don't remember, at the land summit, a committee was established, a multi-stakeholder forum, which fell apart because the department couldn't get its act together. Now, with the summit, we are seeing similar things. It's 2 years down the line. We've heard that there are task teams or working groups that have been established, but there's been a complete lack of transparency. Some civil society people have been handpicked to participate, and we believe that organized agriculture is very well represented in these structures. So we are very concerned about the department and its conduct, because these summits cost us millions of rands. And the other thing is, we left that summit in Somerset West. Farm workers are very excited. We passed radical resolutions, and 2 years down the line, we're sitting here. It's like deja vu. We just talk about the same things over and over again. So we do want to ask the portfolio committee to apply pressure to the department, because they can't actually implement these resolutions alone. They need all these partners in agreement, but they need to drive the partnership, which they haven't done after the land summit, and which they haven't done since the farm worker summit. So that is our request, Chairperson Sizani. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, oh, the two of you, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I thank the members and for the comments and the questions. I would like to put an apology for the department that we did not bring all the documentation. We do have a plan of action which is costed with dates, and we are hoping that before the end of the meeting today we'll be able to share it with the meeting. I also, Chairperson, without responding to individual questions, just to repeat what I said when I started, that even though the initiative for the summit had come from the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, in terms of the summit itself, we expected that the leadership to deal with the resolutions that were adopted would come from government, civil society and the private sector, and that our minister, together with the Minister of Labor, Rural Development and Land Reform, would continue to provide the leadership. If it is permissible, Chair, I would request that before the end of the meeting, we be given a chance to present quickly on key issues that are captured in the progress report document. And I must say, I would do apology, it's because of lack of guidance in terms of the actual agenda of the meeting today. Thank you.
Ma'am, you're requesting you come back again today with a presentation of progress report. You want to do progress report. practical steps that have been taken together with the action plan. Thank you very much. That's what we do. That's progressive. Ms. Middleton, you will not say anything. Okay. Now, we have now agriculture making a commitment here. We have four other departments, but I'm under pressure here to take this break for 10 minutes and listen to the four departments when we come back. Are we agreed to do that? Agreed? I don't want to force you on a break. If you don't want a break, please be my guest. I want you here. A break?
No.
Baba Uzulu Utini?
I think a few minutes left now. We better just carry on to 1 o'clock.
Until 1 o'clock?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You are beautiful. I want that. All right, now we get to the next department. Department of Health. The Department of Health made a commitment there on that day. They will visit the farms, they will provide mobile clinics and so on. Come, what have you done?
Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues, good day. Chair, allow me to address the issues as they relate to the Department of Health, not being privy to the previous commitments that the department made. I'll talk to the things we do and share the experiences also as a sector. Chairperson, borrowing from the document that was presented by the Department of Agriculture, as the chair could have seen it, the first commission on that day of the summit was the Commission on the Social Determinants of Health. Chair, the social determinants of health are the factors that are lying outside the scope and the influence of the Department of Health, but have a greater bearing and impact on the health outcomes. And this I'll relate to them as they talk to the conditions of the farm workers and farm dwellers. Through the number of the farms where our mobile clinics go, and even where the community healthcare workers would go, you'd find that they've got no access to water, they've got no access to sanitation, they've got no access to housing, no access to roads. And as the colleague from FAO has eloquently presented the story of and demonstrated the water quality issues, those are the things that we experience. And without those amenities being available, honorable members and chair, truly the health outcomes can never be better. We do also note that because of the challenges that are there, the workers that are working there, areas of occupational health and safety, though the lead department in that area in terms of ensuring compliance is the Department of Labor, we do, as a sector, that take more seriously the issues of safety and health of people that are at work, particularly those that are handling hazardous substances, particularly people that may be exposed to vectors that would carry diseases such as malaria, to say the extent to which they are protected. And also issues of food security, and is an area that we collaborate and share with the Department of Agriculture, but from our own point of view, it also goes deeper into the ensuring that children of farm workers and farm dwellers do not become victims of malnutrition. And it is in that area that we get very interested. Now, what is the impact, Chair, of the evictions, as they would happen from time to time when the health outcomes? Chair, the evictions would result in, among others, the interruption of treatment. For example, if a mother who receives TB treatment gets evicted with the family, it will be very difficult for one for follow up in terms of the people that are doing the directly observed treatments for the cause, which is called DOTS for short, where people are visited in their homes to monitor that they're taking their treatment. Normally that will get disrupted. During evictions, people would lose the valuable cards, such as your road to health cards that people would commonly call immunization cards that little babies of under 6 years would carry. And pregnant mothers would in the process of eviction, because it's normally not that orderly. The forms that pregnant mothers carry, I'm sure all mummies around here would know a paper that they carry, which is called partogram. Those are some of the valuable documents that will get lost. And as a result of that, it becomes very difficult to track and trace progress that patients are making in terms of progression towards either being cured or being ready for delivery if they're pregnant. And they do also impact on the disruption of the schedule of mobile clinic visits, because, for example, when the farms change ownership, normally health is never consulted. So we find that there's an agreement with Farmer A in terms of the days of the visits to the farm and the specific venue at which the mobile clinic is going to be located. Now, when the ownership changes names, hands, we never take it into confidence. We never are aware. And so when the mobile clinic arrives, that it may experience difficulties because this farmer may not have been part of the agreement, particularly in the cases where a farm may have been regarded as a central farm, where the farm workers from other neighboring farms would come together because of size. Normally, farmers would agree that this particular farm becomes a central point where patients would assemble at a particular time that the mobile clinic is coming. That would then obviously lead to a delay and disruption of treatment flow and stuff. And as we'd know, because mobile clinics move abroad within clinics, if they miss to come and visit, the patient misses to come on the day, it may mean that the patient will have to wait for another time, which actually interrupts the treatment flow and obviously the cure may be delayed. And there are areas where, for an example, when we talk about social determinants of health being roads, the access of the ambulances to the farms, when there are emergencies, there may be difficulties because the roads may not have been tarred and the people may be living, as the colleague from FAU said, maybe 1 kilometer deep into the farm, and that may be a difficulty. Having said that, Chairperson, what is it that we're doing? I mean, it remains a challenge. Because of the size of the communities that we service as in the farm workers, we use the mobile clinic as a mode of delivering health services to the farm workers and farm dwellers. And that is continuing, Chair, save for the, I don't want to say natural constraints, but the general constraints of resources. But we do in a very sustained way, in some sense of regular visitations, do go to the farms to provide those services. I'm sure, Chair, the research that would be done would obviously, as it would with other sectors, explain the extent to which we are or we're not doing the work that we should be doing and the level of quality, and would obviously be guided by the outcomes of that work. But I'm not preempting anything, Chairperson. And also, the difficulties you'd have, Chair, it's because the farms are private owned, you may not be able to erect even the physical infrastructure where the mobile clinic would park. But we rely, and Chairperson, we're very grateful for majority of the farmers that have made available some infrastructure where our vehicles would park and deliver those services. And that's how we do it. So that we do enhance, dignity of the people that we see in those areas. Currently, the department is embarking on a process of re-engineering primary health care services, and we're focusing on the three streams, but I don't want to bore this meeting with all the streams, but the two important streams that are coming to the fore, which would want to use to improve access and coverage of service delivery. Chair, we are in the process of establishing, and in fact, they've already been established, and some of them have started working, the ward-based or community-based primary health care outreach teams, which would make us target the remote rural and farming communities. I'm just saying this, Chairperson, so that I deal with all these aspects of rural, remote, and farming at the same time. This is another aspect of making sure that we have people that are working as food soldiers that would go into these hard-to-reach places where many people are afflicted by the health ills that do not necessarily require hospitalization or even visitation at the clinic, which would require self-care or health education for good and healthy lifestyles at the places of their where they are living. So we're doing that, Chairperson. We also want to strengthen the school health services because there are indeed schools where the children of the farm workers and the farm workers do attend. Chairperson, I may not be able to explain, the different distances from the farm to the schools, but what we'll do with this program, Chair, is to make sure that these children that go to such schools are then visited on a very regular basis through either a mobile clinic that would focus and attack at the school, so that children's health is taken care of it very early in their lives. So this approach, Chair, we'd want to make sure that we target what we in this sense, and I'm sure it's not our definition, it's a definition from the health economies generally, target the highly deprived areas of our societies, including remote, rural, and farming communities. And we'll focus on the quintile one schools. And among the quintile one schools, we'd find more of the farming schools. So therefore, this way we'd want to target Chairperson. Chair, I don't want to add to other challenges that colleagues have listed, but I do want to say, in spite of us having wonderful farmers and farm owners out there, you do experience areas where the mobile clinic is refused entry into a farm. But of course, I do agree with AGRI-SA. Perhaps we could work better by studying to name and shame, as it were, so that there's a clear database in terms of saying where we're sitting. What is these numbers and what are we doing that? Because otherwise, it would become a matter of he said and I said. So therefore, none would be able to carry the onus of proving this regard, Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson and the members, I would pause here, and I will be keen to respond to any further questions if they are available. Thanks very much.
You want to ask a question? No, wait, because the Department of Health must complete the presentation. Chief, where are they happening? What you were saying nicely, where is it happening? These provinces, perhaps, can the NGOs and other unions know that what you're talking about is actually happening somewhere? Where is it happening?
Honourable Chair, if I had known, I could have brought the database in terms of the spread of the way we deliver mobile services to all farms, and I'm sure it's a report that we could, and I don't want to say tomorrow because we, in report, the information we got was that we're not going to make a presentation, but we do in all our provinces have a program of mobile clinics. In terms of establishment of the outreach teams, Chairperson, we also have a database of, say, which municipality. And in some instances, which wards, for an example, would say, if we say Thabo Mokhutswanyane, we would say Ward 5, which would include, for an example, Bethlehem, which would include farms around Ladysmith. So that information, Chairperson, we have. But because we didn't know that we were supposed to bring it along, we then left on that, and Mike Griffiths apology for that. But we do also say, Chair, whether that information that would provide would be adequate or not. I'm sure the judges of the authenticity of this report would be people that are working on the ground, would be NGOs, would therefore even give contact of our district offices so that the colleagues can then interact with the managers there. For an example, if at National we say we do this, and they can go verify it through their daily interaction with the colleagues on the ground, that would make people to provide Chairperson. Thanks very much.
I did not want to preempt. I wanted you to provide this information so that by the time questions come, you have already covered in your presentation up front. Because you see, what can help us here? You remember we're speaking about people who have got no voice. They can't exercise their vote to enforce these things happening because they are unorganized. But if you said to us, we have X number of mobile clinics, they cover X number of areas and touch X number of people. Because, see, part of this is going to impact negatively or positively, depending on what you do and the quality of what you do, on MDGs of the country. We know what's happening in the shack areas and the townships and the villages, but we don't know what's happening on farms. And the impact of what you're talking about nicely here can be reflected by the impact, by the reduction or improvement of the conditions towards our meeting our goals, MDG goals, South Africa's MDG goals. So for me, it is an important issue for you to give us facts rather than generalities about your approach to these things. It will help these people also to know, yeah, is a useful partner we can invite along to work with us on these farms. Remember that the Department of Agriculture here is saying they've got an action plan. It's got a budget to it. But they want partners. Agri-SA says we are willing to educate our farmers. We want them to cooperate, but we want partners. That's what we're looking for. So in generalities, yes, it's nice, but in practical terms, we want to know where we can go and see. Remember, at the beginning here, I was very scared to offend people who are not reading the Christian Bible, but I was saying St. John 3, verse 11. We want to see what you're talking about so that we can bear witness to that. Currently, we can't, because you spoke very nicely about the re-engineering of the primary health care. We want to go and see where it is impacting on the people. Thank you very much. You wanted to make a comment, Chief?
Yes, thank you, sir. I think from time to time, we need to remind ourselves we're singing and we're praising of a constitutional democracy. I'm actually concerned. Farm workers are citizens. So now, private ownership of farms, we cannot bear that. We're speaking of a human rights within a constitution. We're speaking of health, these beautiful things. Now, what I'm saying now, and I'm very much concerned, is that if private ownership of a farm or wherever in the country, within the borders of this country, which is a constitutional democracy then we need to look at legislation. We need to look at legislation seriously, because there cannot be an argument of someone, because of a private ownership, withholding human rights, withholding health services, for whatever reason. So these things need to then look at seriously by the department and all role players, and there needs to be an understanding and a commitment from the farmers and other SA as well. I think it's high time, because now we're moving towards 20 years. And you're quite right. I mean, I'm very concerned, because I'm a owner from a farming area. And what he's saying here, and the private farm owners, it seems like favoritism. There should be a legal empowerment emanating from the Constitution, so that we do not have, and the farmers know about that, and Agri-SA can do their job properly, as I said before. Also from their perspective, because they understand these things and they want to also assist and sensitize the farmers. But we cannot have a situation, sir, honestly, where private ownership becomes a kind of a problem, a blockage. Not in a constitutional democracy. It's unacceptable. Farm workers are citizens. Thank you.
Comrade from South Farm.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just through you, Chairperson, a question to the Department of Health. To what extent does the school feeding schemes contribute to the health of rural people or rural children? And have they ever thought about engaging Agri-SA or farmer produce or producing organizations like AgriSA, TAO, and those organizations regarding the conditions of farm workers and labor tenants on farms, by improving those conditions, and then also as a chain effect or a ripple effect, improving the conditions of health on those farms and in the rural areas. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Yes, Comrade.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. I think, Chairperson, look, we're very impressed with the Department of Health, especially the National Minister's very progressive commitments. Our understanding, and I think that the public can correct us if we are wrong, is that the community health workers hasn't yet fully come on board. It's still in the baby steps. We view it as one of the critical foundation blocks towards the NHI, but what we are understanding is that it's still being kind of piloted and rolled out. So I'm not sure if the department, as you're saying, Chairperson, correctly, can just give us a kind of a sense of how many community health workers do they have on the ground, provinces and so on. Because wards are very large. You know, a ward in a metro has got about 35,000 residents, for example. And a ward in a rural area might have 1,000 farms. So for one community health worker, it's a very huge task to visit 1,000 farms in 1 year. So just to kind of get a sense of numbers from the ground, Chairperson. Thanks.
Any further questions? Yes, you can come on.
My apologies for talking so much.
No. You can't apologize for other people keeping quiet.
The growth stunting amongst children of farm workers is the most marked of any category of children in the country. So we want to know if the Department of Health tracks the nutritional levels of children, and also we know that delegations from the Department of Health have gone to Brazil to look at the Zero Hunger program, and one of the strategies that they use there, which links to land reform, is that the school programs have used the production of small-scale farmers to feed schools in rural areas. So it's a very